I've been having such a good chat with my guest in the studio that I'm joined in the studio by the incredibly talented and well-respected composer, jazz pianist and researcher Dan Banks. The Dan Banks Quintet have a new album out on the 1st of December called Simulated Cities, and Dan is going to be playing some of the tracks from the much anticipated album. So it's lovely to see you again.
Yeah, lovely to be here.
So we're going to kick off first of all with a track which is called Simulated Cities. So tell us about this track.
So this track's from the album that's coming out this Saturday. It's kind of hard bop, so kind of like 50s, 60s, blue note sounding jazz. The name, well, I kind of retrospectively name my tunes. So I wrote this tune, and it didn't have a name at all. And I kind of listened to it in the studio post-recording and thought, it kind of reminds me of the music from SimCity 2000. I'm a bit of a gamer. And I thought, I'll just call it Simulated Cities.
Just said very classy. We should be here with a glass of wine now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is fabulous.
In a smoky room.
Well, you can't get a smoky room anymore.
No,
you're not allowed to smoke.
Yeah.
I hope you don't smoke on stage.
No, I don't smoke at all.
Good. I knew you were going to say that.
I have that look about me,
though. You do have that look. You don't smoke.
Actually, I was self-taught initially, so no piano lessons came a bit later. I think I have a really early memory. Maybe I was about four. My dad was doing contract cleaning at the time, and he took me to a school on a Saturday to clean. You know, he was cleaning the hall or whatever, and took me with him for whatever reason. And just to entertain me, he opened the piano in the hall and just plonked me there and left me there. And I remember just having this feeling of real kind of, how would I describe it? Just, it was really exhilarating. There's lots of kind of sounds and colours that I could explore. And I think that was probably the beginning of it for me. And then it was a few years after that my dad just got me a keyboard, and that was it. I was kind of off. My dad showed me some tunes, because my dad could play a little bit, and I was just working things out by ear. And then, yeah, I think my dad probably bought me a little book to learn from, and it wasn't until maybe I was into my teens that I had lessons, actually.
Oh, wow.
So it's quite a lot of kind of big period of kind of self-taught learning.
We were saying there's hope for everybody, whatever age you are. There's still hope to learn to play the piano.
Absolutely, yeah. Just start. If you're thinking about it, just start doing it.
Just start doing it. Who are your inspirational composers and pianists that you look up to?
So from a jazz point of view, I think what really turned me to jazz when I was 16, my aunt bought me a Keith Jarrett CD, and that really kind of opened my ears to jazz. Before that, I knew I could improvise. I could always improvise quite confidently, but I didn't really realise it was a thing that you could properly do. So I'd put Keith Jarrett on that list. Chick Corea, some kind of more modern players, someone like Uri Kane, young Joey Alexander's a brilliant jazz pianist as well. Jacob Collier, it's an endless list. It's hard to kind of pick just a few.
How did the Dan Banks Quintet get together?
I think I decided that I wanted to sort of put a proper album together. I'd kind of experimented with going into the studio and doing odd bits of recording, and so I just started writing initially, and I thought I would just see how the tunes turned out, what they were like. And after the writing process, I realized they were quite kind of 50s, 60s sounding, blue note sounding. So I thought a quintet, kind of classic jazz quintet with a saxophone, trumpet and the rhythm section would work well. And then I just chose people that I kind of know and work with regularly. So Jussie on double bass, we kind of play quite regularly at a gig in Southend at the Railway. Josh Law, I play with regularly at the Basement. Paul Higgs, I've done various gigs with. Roberto Manzine, who's on sax, was the only person I didn't know quite so well, but we'd done like a couple of things together, but I thought he and Paul could kind of meld nicely together as a section. Then we just went into the studio. That was it, no rehearsals, just straight in one day in the studio. Quite like it being really organic, so yeah. We don't do any rehearsals at all. We've never done a rehearsal, because I feel, in fact, I don't really rehearse any of my projects, because I kind of feel like it's nice to maximize organicism and it be really kind of in the moment. And if that means there's the odd mishap or kind of error, that's fine. That's all part of being human. For the quintet, it's quite kind of classic jazz modus operandi in that I write the tune and there's a chord sequence that we might call it a cyclic reference. It's just this reference sequence that goes round and round and round. That's all I write. Mm. And I might have some idea about how I want it to feel, but that's fluid as well. So I think it's good to allow the musicians lots of space to interpret and bring their expertise. You know, I don't really know that much about playing the drums, so I'd rather Josh or Mark Sess or whoever I'm working with, you know, that's their domain. Mm. I'll let them make the choices.
Glad we got Mark's name in there. He'll be angry if we don't mention him at least four times. Now we're going to hear another track. This one is called Catastrophes. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this is a curveball. So this is a project I'm doing with Trevor Taylor and Juse Kanya. So Trevor on drums and percussion and Juse on double bass. This is a bit out there. So this is technically kind of on the cusp between free jazz and improvised music. Now, often when you say that, it can be a bit frightening because it's... That means there's no constraints. So there's no tune, there's no chords. In fact, when we did this, is one take, and we didn't even discuss what we were going to do. We just started playing. But there's an interesting thing here that I'm using a sonic score. So rather than using a written score, I've put some nominal constraint in by creating a sonification. It's a big fancy word, but all that means is I've turned some data into sound. So this is data on natural catastrophes that have occurred over the last 200 years. This whole project is about humankind's impact on the environment. So I've taken data, climate change data, and turned it into sound. And we use that sound as a score. So we kind of play along with that sound. It's in our ears in the studio. But what you hear is minus the sound. So the sound is invisible in the same way a score is invisible to you as the listener.
Right. So just explain. So if you've taken... So it's basically you've taken sort of text and you've turned the text into sounds, then that's playing through your headphones, and then you can hear... Are you actually hearing like a...
It's like a drone, yeah. So but the drone... Parameters of the drone are changing with the data. So I've turned data... So, like, you know, when we talk about data, the basic notion is... change over time, right? So stuff changes over time. So all I've done is set an amount of time, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I've randomly picked a key. So there's just like one note. It's a drone. And then I've turned the data, and I've used the data to change one of the parameters of the synthesizer that's generating the sound. So it kind of changes over time. But you don't hear that as the listener. So we've heard that.
Yeah.
And we're responding to that and kind of mediating that and responding to each other. And that's the process.
I just asked you whether or not if you were to do a gig, could you do that song again? And your response?
No, never, ever again. It's completely irreplicable. And that's kind of the beauty of it. Because there's so little constraint, that moment is completely unique in time. We're just lucky we recorded it, I suppose. You know, but we could, every gig with this project, or any free project, and actually jazz generally, because it's so improvised, will kind of never be the same. It's great. It's such a wonderful experience to share with an audience as well. And all the fellow musicians, we know this moment, it will never happen again. I mean, you could say you could say the same of life, couldn't you? Yeah, I think it's almost one of the drugs for jazz, I think, that keeps us going, that each expression and gesture we know is going to be completely unique.
How many tracks did you actually write for the album, and did they all make it?
So seven tracks, and they all made it. Yeah. I think I probably actually wrote maybe, in fact, I'm telling a lie, I maybe wrote a few more than that, but it wasn't a creative process that kind of got them axed. It was a logistical one. So we just kept recording until we ran out of time. We got seven tracks. Okay. I think I have quite a few kind of incipient ideas in my mind, and they might be like a little melodic fragment. It could be a chord sequence. It could just be an idea of how something might sound. And I let them just kind of stew in there. And every now and then I'll go to the piano and a few of them will coalesce and turn into a tune. So the first tune we listened to, Simulated Cities, I wrote that 2 days before the session. I just had that little groove and I was like, oh, this is a tune. And it just, within 20 minutes, it was written out. Yeah, the quintet stuff we recorded at Paul Higgs's studio. So it's got a little studio, home studio, lovely Steinway. Mm. And just a day.
Yeah.
One day.
A day
and
in
then
the studio.
Same with the sonifications. We've recorded that at Visconti Studio, so that's down in Kingston, because it's Trevor's releasing it on his album, his record label. And again, that wasn't even a day, that was just like an afternoon. Mm. And each of the sonifications, just one take.
Yeah.
Didn't do it again. My attitude is that I want it to be really organic. So I don't mind there being errors. There's little kind of mishaps. There's perhaps a false start here and there, or, you know, something that kind of, it's warts and all. And I think that's good. That's how I want
it. Do you engineer it and mix it yourself, or do you let somebody else take that over?
So Paul did all of that for the quintet, and then with the sonifications project, Trev and I kind of doing that, the kind of post-production stuff between us.
Now, what artist would you have liked to work with? They can be alive, preferably, or they can be dead. But if they could bring them back to life, who would it be that you'd like to sort of do a couple of gigs with?
That's
or
a
work
really
with?
Hard question. I might go with another pianist. I've not done many piano duets in a jazz setting. Mm. So maybe, I mean, it might segue nicely into talking about my research. Let's go with Chick Corea.
Right. There we go. When you're listening to music and you're about to put a solo down, do you sing that as you're playing it, or how does that go through from your brain to your fingers?
I think it's quite a messy process. So yeah, I do sing along under my voice, or sometimes not so under my voice. My wife often says, if she comes to a gig, I can hear you mumbling
and
things.
Turn that PA down,
I think we're definitely oralizing what we're doing. So it's in our mind's ear. I like that term. It's, you know, we're hearing it. But then also, we're talking about this before we started today, there's an element, this notion of the flow state. So I think sometimes we enter this kind of meditative state where we let our conscious mind ebb away. And then in that place, I'm not really thinking about it at all. So I don't know that I'm oralizing it in the same sort of way. I'm just letting the music kind of flow through me and by me. So I think in that place, yeah, I don't know that I have any real control over it. I feel like I relinquish conscious control. And I think perhaps a lot of musicians might kind of get to the improvising musicians, that is, try to get to that place as well. I think that's where the magic happens, really.
Flow state.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm going to be using that quite a bit now. You're also a researcher. Tell us about the research into Chick Corea.
Okay, so my research has actually got two avenues. I'm looking at Chick Corea and interaction in jazz performance. That's how jazz is like conversation, how we have back and forth. So Chick Corea is a post-bop pianist, very prolific, very influential. What led me to look at Chick Corea from a research point of view is that, given that he's so influential, probably one of the top five jazz pianists of the late 20th and 21st centuries, there's very little research on Chick Corea at all. I mean, a few essays, a book, that's it. So from an academic point of view, that's quite sparse. And those two notions are kind of interconnected. So what also led me to Chick Corea is there's this wonderful DVD of his called Rendezvous in New York that's just really imbued with interaction. There's lots of interaction in that DVD. And I thought, oh, that'd be a great kind of artifact to look at these two notions from, you know. And part of my research is looking at this idea, these notions from two perspectives as well, which is quite interesting. So I'm looking at interaction as a researcher, as an analyst, so that's kind of being outside of the phenomenon, and then I'm also looking at it as a performer. I've got that narrative as well, and talking about it from within the phenomena as well.
Yeah, you could be here all day, Dan, chatting to you about music. Absolutely fabulous. Now, the album is out on the 1st of December. If you could describe the album in three words, and I forgot to tell you this off air. Three words to sum up the album.
Jazz has got to be one of them, right? Improvisation. Yep. Blue Note's two words, but let's go with that as well. That's four. You'll give me an extra word.
Yes, you're going to have the extra word.
So it's available through my website. So Bandcamp is a really good website. So I've put it on there so you can kind of stream it, limited streaming, and then you can buy it digitally, or I can send you a physical copy.
Yeah. Now, this last track, a Dan Bantz quintet, is called Second Line Sidestep. Tell us about this one.
Again, my practice of naming tunes retrospectively, I wrote this tune and it's got a kind of second line feel, which is like a New Orleans marching band feel. So I just kind of thought a little bit of alliteration's all right as well. And that's how I named it.
Thank you so much for coming in. A pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
And
don't forget,
the album is out on the 1st of December, Dan Bantz Quintet. And we're going to finish with this one. This is Second Line Sidestep. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.